Hello, Rebels of the Short Pollution. Normally, I start off this podcast by saying hi, but I'm going to start this one off by saying hydration. We know how important hydration is for our bodies. It's the thing that keeps us running, right? You want to be a well-oiled machine. You want to be running efficiently. You know what can help you run efficiently? Liquid IV. It is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier is the one product that you are missing in your daily routine. It comes in a little stick that's a powder, and in just one stick, you get 5 essential vitamins and 2 times faster hydration than water alone. If you use it first thing in the morning, maybe before a workout, when you feel run down, maybe after a long night out and doing a little partying, you know what I mean? And even, what if you have like a long flight or something like that and you just bleh, right? We all feel that way, bleh. So add this to your water, and that convenient packaging can go with you anywhere you go, even if you're going to the gym or you're traveling or you're at work and maybe you didn't have a great breakfast. At least it's something that will fuel you up in the morning. And there's a whole bunch of flavors that are available, like sea berry, strawberry lemonade, Concord grape, lemon lime, pina colada, tropical punch, watermelon, strawberry, passion fruit, guava, acai berry. Did I say that right? I never know how to say that. But those are just some of the flavors. Here's some statistics for you folks. One stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water contains 5 essential vitamins: B3, B5, B6, B12, and even vitamin C. And we all know how important those B vitamins are. It's got 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. It's made with premium ingredients. It's non-GMO, and it is free from gluten, dairy, and soy. I'm going to offer you a great deal, Rebels. If you go to liquidiv.com and use offer code Sherpa, you can get 20% off of anything that you order on that site when you're shopping for some better hydration. So that's Liquid IV. Check it out at liquidiv.com.
Too Many Podcasts is brought to you in cooperation with the SJ Network. If you are a person who would like to appear on podcasts, contact Stephen Joyner at s-j-network.com. We now direct you to the Sherpa Chalet, where we will turn it over to Jim the Podcast Sherpa. How he got this job is anyone's guess.
Today, it's a bonus episode of the Sherpa Screening Room. And if you live in or around the Atlanta, Georgia area, we have an actual screening that you can go see. Check out this interview with Derek Miner for details. And if you're wondering if the Sherpa is in this movie, he is. Well, actually, he accidentally locked himself in the projection booth.
Coming to you from Sherpa Chalet in beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, it's time for entertainment interviews in the Sherpa Screening Room. Grab an aisle seat and a bucket of popcorn, but don't crunch too loud or you'll miss the show. Now, here's your host, Jim the Podcast Sherpa.
Hello there, Rebels, and welcome to the Sherpa Screening Room. It is a presentation of Too Many Podcasts, which is the podcast about podcasts and so much more. Jim the Podcast Sherpa, coming to you from Sherpaloo Studios, high atop beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, here in the Sherpa Chalet. This is a special bonus episode. Why is it a special bonus episode? Because this may be something special for some of you listeners out there, as a matter of fact. It's a little bit short notice, but it's going to be something interesting. How would you like to go to a movie screening and meet one of the stars of the movie? That's right, I'm not kidding. I got a guest today. His name is Derek Miner. He's the guy behind the whole thing. He's the mastermind. We got to spend a little time together, and he's filling me in on the project. And if you live in or around the Atlanta area and you know where the Plaza Theater is, Friday night, February 9th, 2024, at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can go to the Plaza Theater and see a screening of I Want to Hold Your Hand, the classic directed by Mr. Robert Zemeckis. And who's going to be there? One of the stars of the movie, as well as a previous guest here on the Sherpa Screening Room. That's right, Mr. Eddie Deason. You can go and see a fun movie and get the chance to meet Eddie Deason in person. So Derek and I discussed all the details, and we got to know Derek as well. He's got some pretty good stories. He's definitely big time into pop culture, and he's got some interesting projects going on, so we got to discuss those as well as the movie. So have a listen to this bonus episode and my conversation with Derek Miner.
Hello, Rebels. I am here in the Sherpa screening room, and I am joined by a man who refers to himself as, to quote High Fidelity, a professional appreciator. His name is Derek Miner. Derek's done a lot of different things in regards to the pop culture area. He knows all sorts of stuff. Man's been a movie critic. He is currently arranging a movie screening this coming weekend, and we're going to talk about that. And he's also got a couple of other projects up his sleeve, so this is kind of like an emergency episode, but I'm glad to have him here. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure.
So I like that. A professional appreciator. You just have a love for pop culture.
I have a love for pop culture. And I like to, I'll tell you, there's nothing greater than seeing a reaction of somebody like finding something new or discovering something great, you know? So we were talking just before I started that for a while I was working on a film festival. Mm-hmm. I co-founded a film festival called the Sunscreen Film Festival. It's still going in St. Petersburg, Florida. And one year, like in our second or third year, we were able to bring in the co-writer of Children of Men. I was talking with somebody who was like a local filmmaker in the area. And I was like, oh, hey, would you like to meet the guy who wrote Children of Men? And he just like, his eyes lit up. And I was like, it's great to be in a position sometimes where you can introduce somebody to something like that. And artists can connect and talk about good art and stuff like that. So things like that, I love it. And that's kind of like what spurred this event that I'm working on for this week that you mentioned. It's what might be the first in a series. I hope to do more things like this, but I'd been thinking for a while that when we hit the anniversary of the Beatles being on the Ed Sullivan Show on February 9th, that I really wanted to show this movie, I Want to Hold Your Hand, in a theater and have people come out and see it. And because it's a story about a group of kids who go from New Jersey to New York, and they want to meet the Beatles, and they're all, you know, all different levels. There's a couple of people who like hate the Beatles. There's like a girl that's just crazy about the Beatles, you know. So it's like it's all their stories, and it came out in the late 70s, 1978. It was like an American Graffiti inspired thing, and they wanted to. So that movie was the first movie that Robert Zemeckis did, who everybody's going to know that Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. That was the movie that really put him on the map. And this was the first movie he ever did. And he kind of got brought into the movies through Steven Spielberg.
Right.
And so Steven Spielberg produced this movie. And so like as a movie person, I'm just totally fascinated with it. And as a Beatles person, I'm totally fascinated with it. So that's like, I want to do something. I want to put this on. So I got it set up to show in a theater. And then I just knew a lot of people who were similarly pop culture obsessed as I was on Facebook, were friends with Eddie Deason. And I was like, oh, okay, it's Eddie Deason. He's in this movie. And everybody, you know, people are going to remember him from Grease and War Games. And lots of B movie stuff that he did throughout the 80s, and he did cartoon voices. I think you had him on the show, so people probably already know this.
Yeah,
so
it's okay.
I kind of checked that out and found out, you know, I reached out through his manager to be kind of like the proper thing, and so we all worked it out. And so Eddie, I was like, great, I'm going to show this movie and do what I like to do, which is to have somebody come around and talk about making the movie. And so we'll have Eddie come out and do a Q&A and talk about the movie. And so I was like, that's the kind of, like I said, I love this kind of stuff, you know, just getting to put these people in front of audiences. And if I go to like conventions and stuff like that, panels, like I love to go to the panels and hear the stories and see people who are excited to interact and ask questions of the fan, you know, for the fans asking the questions of the, and I find it like, the people who do those conventions and stuff like that, they work so much better in that environment talking to their fans directly, as opposed to like when you see them in marketing, trying to promote something, you know, there's just so many cool personalities that, and you see great sides of people when they do these events that are just like one-on-one interactions with fans and
events
like that. So,
yeah, I would guess, you know, when they're having like stuff like that, like the autograph fairs and such, in a sense, they're a captive audience because you know what they're there for. You know, they want to meet people. They want to get autographs. It's not like they're just going to walk past everybody's table, walk out the building and go, eh, I didn't really want to do that anyway. They know at some point they're going to make some sort of contact with someone whose work maybe have influenced them, or they're just big fans or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had a lot of great experiences in shows like that, you know, myself, just getting a chance to meet some of those people and hear good stories, you know. And I'll tell you one thing I learned from going to shows like that is that guys who do, and Eddie fits into this category too, like guys who do voiceovers are like students of pop culture history. They are in depth. Like if you hear interviews with like Billy West or Maurice LaMarche.
Pinky in the Brain.
Pinky in the Brain, exactly. Yeah. They know old school stuff. And they're like, well, you know, it's just a thing, you know, it's just like if you work in Hollywood, you know these things. Like, oh no, they know a lot more. They know the deep cuts. They know that stuff.
Absolutely. So, you know, I was wondering, you know, you were saying that, you know, you managed to convince Eddie to come on. And, you know, you, as you mentioned earlier, getting the director of Children of Men to come on. What kind of persuasion do you use to get their interest?
Oh, I wish I had a great technique. You know, it's just being polite and asking nicely. You know, knowing people helps. You know, you make connections with people and get to the right people, you know. And it's tough, you know, because like you kind of have a track record for things. And like I said, when we were doing the film festival in Florida, it's the second or third year we did it. So it was something that was going. And so we were able to get some good guests. We had some ins, you know, down in St. Petersburg, there's the Wilson family is a multi-generation television family. So there was like a father and a son who've both been on the local news down there. But one of the sons is Patrick Wilson, the film star. And so, you know, he's a local boy. Before we even did the film festival, we had done some things with Paul Wilson. He was doing PR and he's kind of moved into, he's taken after his brother and decided to become an actor himself. He's done some good. He's gotten into some movies. He played Nixon in a TV thing, I think. So you know, when you meet the right people, it comes in handy later on. You know.
So talk about the event that's going to be happening this Friday. So everybody knows right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. So we're in Atlanta, Georgia, and this is the Plaza Theater. And when I first came to Atlanta a couple years ago. Coming right out of the pandemic, they were starting to do more programming. And like, this is the theater that I always wanted to have where I was living, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now I'm living where this theater is. This is great. It's the oldest operating independent theater in Atlanta. It was built in 1939. They have a great little space and a great main auditorium with the curtains and everything. It looks really great. They have a great marquee sign outside with bright blue and red. It's beautiful. When I first got there, I was like, I just like this. And they just kept putting on things that I was like, I gotta go. I got to see 2001 A Space Odyssey in 70 millimeter for the first time, and Lawrence of Arabia in 70 millimeter for the first time. And so like, they were doing things I wanted to see. So when I thought of this idea, I was like, I gotta put this on at the Plaza. So I got in touch with them to do it. And so this is the Plaza Theater, and it's going to be February 9th. So it's the day that the Beatles did the Ed Sullivan Show in 1964, and it's 60 years. I don't like to, you know, you, you know, I know you're an 80s music guy, and I'm probably around the same age as you are. So sometimes it's like saying like, oh, this was 60 years ago. I mean, we weren't there, but it's a little closer to when we were, you know, now. So it's like, I haven't been saying 60 years a lot, but it is 60. But so it's 60 years. It's an anniversary. I should say it's anniversary of the Beatles being on the Ed Sullivan Show. And so we're going to show this, like I described that movie, I Want to Hold Your Hand. The show's going to kind of be introduced and hosted by Zach Arnold. He's going to do Ed Sullivan for us. So we're going to have like a full on, like, hey, Ed Sullivan comes out and introduces the show. Mm-hmm. And we'll do a Q&A and have a signing with Eddie after the movie.
That's just really cool. What time does everything start, so everybody knows?
We're going to start straight up at 7, you know, get there like between 6:40 and 6:50 or so. They the auditorium will be available at 6:40, they tell me. So it's like,
okay,
you got a 20-minute window to get in there and get your popcorn and everything. And then we'll be starting up right at 7 so we can stay on schedule. We got to be out before Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, okay. Okay. They definitely like keeping it retro if they got to get Rocky Horror at midnight.
Every Friday night.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's a shame that you don't really have too many of those theaters that have the classic movie theater look. I mean, I think a lot of the younger people know multiplexes. You know, I think that's all they'll ever grow up on. And no one knows what like a real movie theater looks like, where you have the marquee and, you know, the little candy stand, you know, for the, mm-hmm. the refreshments and all that stuff. And, you know, the squeaky chairs and the curtains.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I mean, I did come from down in Florida. I was in the Tampa, St. Petersburg area, and there's the Tampa Theater down there, which is another great classic movie house. And it's the style of movie house where they did all of the interior. So it looks like you have like the whole area is surrounded by these balconies, and it has the blue painted ceiling with lights on it. So it looks like a starry sky above you. Mm-hmm. And that was a great theater, but they would do some programming, but not at the level that they're doing here at the Plaza, where they really can, they have a smaller venue and I think, you know, like a bigger audience. And they get in, they can do a lot more of these cult films and retro films and things like that. But the Tampa Theater, they would do things, but they would kind of like get, they had like a summer series, and they would have like a Halloween series. But you'd see a lot of the same stuff. Like, I'm sure every year it would be like, you'd see Casablanca again and Jaws again.
At least they came in the good level of classics, right? It's not like, you know, oh, we're going to see all Ernest movies now. And hurry up, get your tickets.
The crazy thing is, like, I find it interesting that there's like such a, it's weird to think like what audiences are out there for certain things. And if you get into a big enough market, you probably could have we could probably have an Ernest Film Festival maybe in Atlanta, and some people would love it. It's like crazy. Atlanta also has a video store. Like a full on, you go, walk in and can rent movies, and it's called Videodrome. And I was walking around looking, and it's like, they are like, it doesn't look like a big place from the outside, but when you walk inside, they have stacked every inch they can with all of the movies that they can fit in there. And they're very curated, so that they organize everything by filmmakers and by categories and genres. And so it really helps you like direct you to certain things. And it's like, I know I'm going to get a chance to get back there when I'm not trying to set up an event and like actually like see some of these movies that you don't necessarily find on streaming, or, you know, it's a great place to be a film buff. And I know that like, they're that kind of place that you hear about, like that Quentin Tarantino worked at, that like they would recommend movies to you. It's like, I've heard the people there doing this for other people, like, oh, you should see this.
That really could be a potential interesting event, though, Derek, when you think about it.
The Ernest series?
Well, no, I mean, the video store. I know Barney's no longer with us, unfortunately.
Right, yes.
You know, I mean, if you had like some actor from a movie to be in a video store, you know, like, yes. Yeah, like John Cusack, right? Wasn't he in a movie that had to do with, I'm trying to remember the name.
We had the record store, the High Fidelity.
High Fidelity, yeah.
Yep.
But I thought there was another one with a movie. Maybe I'm thinking of a different actor. So we'll tell who's acting on.
Well, there was Be Kind Rewind with Jack Black.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, with Jack Black. Okay.
That's a fun movie.
Get him to show up. And he's a fun guy, I'm sure.
Yes.
You put him in front of an audience, you can really have a happening there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jack Black, like, totally. Yeah. He seems game for anything. I wish I knew him. I did meet him once, but I don't know him to contact him to come and appear and do some swaying at our video store here.
So if you approach him with one of those, we have a really interesting idea for you. The eyebrow would go up, yes.
I don't know. The one time I met Jack, my fun idea for when I actually met Jack Black once was to, I've been working in television for years.
Okay.
Like doing menial stuff. So I don't do anything big. I'm not on camera or anything. Like I don't direct big talent or anything, but I keep things running. So like at the time it was like, when I met Jack Black, it was, when this network, was rerunning, episodes of Touched by an Angel.
Okay.
And believe it or not, Jack Black was in a Touched by an Angel episode.
Really?
Yes, he was. Something that I don't think he probably wants to, I mean, he's probably not ashamed of it, but I mean, it's like, it's probably not something that everybody's going to bring up or he's going to really just bring up on his own. So I remember saying to him, you know what? I saw that Touched by an Angel that you did.
You know, they all have to start somewhere.
Exactly. So either he found that fascinating or hated me. I have no idea. So maybe I can't get him because maybe I've closed that door. I don't know.
Yeah. You got to figure that Leonardo DiCaprio probably doesn't talk about his time on Growing Pains.
Right. Exactly.
Serious actor. You were on an 80s sitcom.
Yeah. Although it's like people who are game for getting into their deeper cuts and stuff like that. That's something that fascinates me too. I'd like in a way, this movie with Eddie is kind of like that because, you know, he's like, you know, not everybody knows this one, you know, it's like, I've known it for years. So it's kind of like, of course people know it, but you know, we really find out like who knows it or whatever. We'll do a poll before the movie and see how many people have seen it before. But you know, with somebody like that, you can, I love that kind of idea of doing a, hey, you know, maybe you haven't seen this movie with this person. Let's have them talk about it, you know, because I'm sure like everybody wants to get Eddie to come out and talk about Grease. Everybody loves Grease. I get it.
Yeah. The interesting, as you mentioned, he was on the show a little while back. The interesting thing that I found about Eddie is he seems to have taken his whole career in stride. You know, mm-hmm. he's got a good story that goes along with everything. He's never trashing people, very, 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 very rarely, you know, and he's definitely that kind of guy that you want there because, you know, like he can draw a crowd and he's going to tell stories that people are going to be like, oh, I didn't know that.
Right. He seems like the raconteur type. You know, he's always going to have that story ready. He's trained somehow over the years to be that guy.
Yeah. And like you also a humongous Beatles fan. So even if you go off on a tangent on the Beatles, he's ready.
Yeah, we'll try to figure that out. Try to see if I got a couple things together. Maybe we'll do some trivia for prizes and we'll figure out some way to work that in and see maybe like. We'll see, maybe I'll try to get some way to go head to head with Eddie and see.
Good luck.
How we can do. Yeah, I know. I want to find out. I heard they don't want him at Beetlefest because of the like. You know, you can't participate.
You can't do their trivia anymore. The creator of the world's hardest Beetle quiz. he threw one question at me, and I was like, "I'm out." You said that you were also working on something with the monkeys. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I have a friend named Craig Smith, and he and I connected over a love of the monkeys. And in a very particular way, we're very detail-oriented people. And so there are like so many angles to the story of the monkeys that I think a lot of people just think, oh, this is these guys that were on TV and they had like they had a couple hits and like they had a couple great songs and mm-hmm. you know, like, but they didn't play on their records, which they did some of the time.
Yeah.
But So people don't think about that, but as a story and a project, like, there is so many things going on behind the scenes with the monkeys. And so, like, where we connected is that, like, kind of piecing together things that didn't make a lot of sense, you know, because they have like all these lists of songs, and it was like weird because they like had songs that they did multiple times, and over the years these have come out in a lot of different versions. So we're kind of those very focused people who are like, okay, we're gonna make order out of all this stuff, and we're gonna figure out all these mysteries, and we're gonna detail it all, and so we kind of dig into it all, and we've just found out so many fascinating things about making those records, because people might not know that there were so many things that they made because it was like a whole project. Like, we're going to put this group on TV, but they need to have songs. And then they also had to have songs to choose from. So it's not like, you know, when a band goes into a studio and makes 12 songs and they put out a record, it's like, no, we're going to record like 30 songs. And we're going to choose the best 12. You know, so there's all these like tapes of record of things that never came out. And they started to come out over the years. So it's like, we've always enjoyed that kind of like archaeology of it all. Mm-hmm. And so, the name that Craig came up with for this project was called Mixing Links instead of Missing Links. Mixing Links, yeah.
Okay.
We have a conversation group on Facebook for this, and Craig, the end goal is a book. Craig is always wanted this to be a book, and we inch closer. You know, we're two guys with full time jobs, but we inch closer all the time. And what we were able to do almost a year ago now at this point, that there was the anniversary last spring of the Monkees album Headquarters, which came out in May of 1967.
Okay.
And there was enough standalone material that we could take like a lot of the material focused on just the recording during that time for that record, and like put all our information together that we wanted to say about how the songs were recorded and how the songs were put together and where do you find all these different versions and outtakes, and did a booklet that we still have copies on sale for that online. And it was really fun to kind of get an actual product to at least show that, yes, that this is what we're working on, and this is what it'll be like, you know? So, we're very proud of that. And it was an ongoing project that we still continue on. And like I said, there's a Facebook group for Mixing Links, the Monkees on Disc, that we always keep in touch with it's a conversation spot for a lot of the collectors out there, that we've come to know over the years. There's a lot of fun, interesting people in that collecting world with the Monkees.
Do you have a favorite Monkees album?
The one that came after Headquarters is called Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones Limited. Oh, you're nodding like you know this. Yes, it's a great record. That's definitely by far my favorite record.
See, I can nod on an audio podcast because they hear the rattling when it happens. Absolutely. I think, and that was at around 67 where, I mean, there, you know, Pet Sounds was out, Sgt. Pepper was out, you know, just that creativity, I think, was just everywhere. There was like something in the water at that point.
Yeah. So many great albums like around that time. It's like, I love that Pisces, Aquarius. I love Pet Sounds, Sgt. Pepper, great albums. The Kinks, Village Green Preservation Society, The Who Sell Out. Great records. I just still love them to this day, you know. Another thing about the Monkees that's kind of like part of our project, this is something I always try to talk about anytime I get a chance to go on somewhere and talk about Monkees stuff, is just get the word out about something that really not a lot of people know about, which is that because of the kind of project it was, where it was basically like, we're marketing records to kids. It's mm-hmm. They tried to keep modifying the show. They were like, well, the show ended on the original run. And then they're like, well, we're going to put it on CBS in the sun on Saturday morning. And they're like, but we need to sell new records. So we're going to put different songs in the show. And so like some of that stuff has been lost time. It's like those have not shown up in places.
Right.
But there are sometimes, you know, as a film movie buff kind of person, I've found that people with like private collections ended up with some of this stuff. So we've come across some of these films that are versions of these shows that only aired like a couple of times between 1970 and 1972 and then like disappeared.
Wow.
And so like one of our goals is to like track those things down as much as we can. And it's just interesting. It's a slow process, you know, because like not everyone hears about these things, and then people don't know what they have, or is just we figure, you know, the more the word gets out there and people think about it, you know, talk to your friends who collect films, you know, do you have films, reels of the Monkees episodes? You know, they could be unique. We just don't, you know,
right.
Check them out.
Do you think that you might get Mickey Dolenz's input one way or the other, or too much of a long shot?
I don't know if we need any. I mean, the great thing is that we do have a good relationship with the person who's kind of the keeper of the Monkees history.
Okay.
And Andrew Sandoval. And he has put out the definitive history book on the Monkees. And the interesting thing to us is that like he's said, like, no, I know what you guys are working on, and I trust you guys on the audio side. So he doesn't want to dig into like telling people like, oh, here's where you find all the different versions of the songs. He's like, those guys know what they're talking about. Ask them.
Okay.
But he is the history person. He's worked with Mickey for years and has gotten all the input on anything Monkees related from Mickey that anybody will ever need. So if we have any questions, he's happy to answer for us. Or, you know, he's put out a lot of interviews with Mickey. As a matter of fact, like he has a book in print called Beatland Books, and they just put out Mickey Dolenz, like a 12x12, few hundred page coffee table book, which is beautiful and fascinating, of like Mickey Dolenz, all his stuff that he kept over the years, which you might think like, well, that's kind of weird. We're going to see a bunch of little things that somebody had in a box since he was a kid. But it's like, it's interesting because he was a TV star in the 50s.
Circus boy.
Exactly. He was Porky, the circus boy. And so there's a lot of things in there from the circus boy era and like his early attempts at, like, you know, he tried to, you know, like he was trying to like be in bands between the time he was circus boy and the Monkees came along. He's got tons of photographs of when he went on tour with when they had Jimi Hendrix on tour with them.
Right.
So like it's just a lot of these photographs, they're either artifacts he's kept or photographs that he took himself. Hmm. And it's just a beautiful book that he and Andrew put together. The Mickey Dolenz archives it's beautiful.
So before I let you go, is there any place that anybody can go online to get any more information?
Yeah, thanks. Like I said, that Mixing Links project that I have, Mixing Links, the Monkees on Disc, there's a Facebook group for that, and also mixinglinksbook.com. And then I did a video on that whole background with these films and the different episodes of the Monkees that came around that were kind of sort of lost. And I hope to do some more videos, not necessarily Monkees related, but maybe some other thing. And just general pop culture stuff. I have it under the name Cutout Bin on YouTube. And I also have I just put up a Cutout Bin page on Facebook to kind of go along with it. The idea being, you know, like those, you know, if you go to the record store back in the day, like things that didn't sell well,
you punch a little hole in them. Yeah.
They put the little notch in it and you put it in the cutout bin, but not everything in the cutout bin was just like bad or anything. It was just overlooked. So
right.
I always think like you call it the cutout bin. Let's talk about the overlooked things.
I like it. All right. Thanks. So here we have Mr. Derek Minor. Thank you so much for letting everybody know. And we hope that they check out those sites and that they'll come by the movie theater and pay a visit to Mr. Deason.
Come see us. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate it. It was a blast talking with you.
We're on that internet thingy at sherpalution.com.
Thank you so much to Derek Miner for swinging by the Sherpa Screening Room. So if you are in the Atlanta area on February 9th, 2024, make sure you swing by the Plaza Theater by 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Catch the movie screening of I Want to Hold Your Hand, and you will have the opportunity to meet Mr. Eddie Deason, one of the stars in the movie. You can even tell him that the Sherpa sent you if you like. And it's a fun movie, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. Personally speaking, Eddie's a super nice guy. I'm sure you will enjoy meeting him as well. But so much thanks go out to Derek Miner for filling us in. And we've got his links on the show notes as well if you want any more information on him as well. Derek, thanks so much. And we will be back next week with part two of the Lord Mr. Bruce interview on Wednesday. Back to our usual schedule. And don't forget that we will have Sherpa Selects this weekend. So I'll be keeping you guys pretty busy. So make sure you stick around and maybe you leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts and you could be eligible to win podcast merchandise. Yay! Okay, time to go. Viva la Sherpalution, everybody. And go see the movie, and I'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sherpa Screening Room. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. I'm Mr. Bruce, and this has been a Sherpaloo Studios production. Viva la Sherpalution.
You know, Rebels, if you've been checking out some of my promotional ads on social media, you'll be aware that I have been using a lot of AI programs to help me create ads. But you know what? There's a lot more uses for AI than just funny little videos. And I'd like to introduce one of our new sponsors, Podium. It is a leader in creating AI tools for podcasters. Now, let's say you've got a podcast, or maybe you're even thinking of doing a podcast. You're probably wondering, well, how can AI be integrated with your workflow? I'll tell you about Podium. As a podcaster, you know that writing show notes and creating chapters and transcribing episodes takes a lot of time, and it can cost you a lot of money too. But you know what? That's where Podium comes in. It's an AI tool designed specifically for creators and podcasters with the goal of making post-production tasks quick and easy. And in just a few minutes, Podium generates show notes, chapters, summaries, clips for social media, a full transcript, suggested episode titles, social media posts, and more. Whew, that's a lot of work for one little program. Your show notes are key to your podcast's success because it helps new listeners find your podcast and they'll know if it's a fit for them. You know, kind of like too many podcasts. It also improves your SEO. That's your search engine optimization. Ooh, big phrase there. And overall accessibility. And with Podium, you can focus on creating a great podcast and let Podium's AI do the heavy lifting. But Podium isn't just for solo creators and podcasters. It's a game changer for editors, producers, marketers, agencies, and production studios. Teams that use Podiums are able to increase workloads, decrease turnaround times, and improve their quality. How does it work? Very easy. First, go to Podium's website, and you'll see that link that's right there in the show notes. You get 3 hours free just to try it. Pretty cool, huh? And using that link also supports this show as well. And you know what else happens? Because I'm a good guy. You use my link, you will get 50% off for your first month. So visit the site, upload an MP3 file, and download your files, and that's it. And if you need anything else, you can use Podium GPT to generate articles and any marketing copy you might need in seconds. Instant show notes, transcripts, chapters for your podcast or channel. This will level up that podcast. So check out Podium today.